Hello, today is Thursday, June 11th of 2026. My name is Kayla Verhoeven, and this is part one of the pantograph. And we'll go ahead and start off with Route 66 Centennial, Hot Rods, Thrill Fans, and McLean. The 32nd Power Tour celebrates America's love affair with cars. McLean. Engines rumbled down Route 66 on Tuesday morning as the Hot Rod Power Tour passed through the village of McLean, bringing a steady stream of classic cars, muscle cars, race cars, wagons, trucks, and modern builds through town. For some residents, it was a front row seat to a nationally known automotive event. For others, it was a family outing and simply an excuse to stand along the mother road and wave. Kendra Fink of McLean came out with her baby daughter, Roni, shortly after 8 a.m. Fink said her grandfather is a car fan, so watching the tour gave the family a way to think about him. My grandfather loves cars, so we are just coming out here and kind of spending our time thinking about him as we watch them, Fink said. Roni is intrigued by cars, and so she's out here waving to everybody. She likes when they go fast. Fink said the cars kept coming throughout the morning, and the drivers made it feel even more welcoming for families. The Hot Rod Power Tour, now in its 32nd year, is one of the largest rolling car shows in the country. It attracted as many as 7,000 vehicles this year, but numbers vary along the way. This year's tour follows Route 66 as the historic highway celebrates its 100th anniversary, with some side trips to sites that can accommodate a large display, such as the former Chanute Air Force Base that is now the Rantoul National Aviation Center, and the Worldwide Technology Raceway in St. Louis. The five-day event began in Joliet and headed south through Illinois. With a stop Tuesday in Rantoul and later stops planned farther west. For McLean and other towns tied to Route 66 history, the cars brought a burst of attention to local businesses, landmarks, and attractions. Savannah Beale, whose father, Daniel Beale, is the village president of McLean, said she did not know much about the Power Tour before hearing from people in Atlanta that the cars would be coming through town. "I like it," she said. "I love old cars." Cars are already a part of Beale's family. She said her family has a Ford T-Bucket and an older Chevy truck, while her father is especially fond of Mustangs. When visitors come through McLean, Beale said she hopes that they notice more than the highway. "They've been doing a lot more stuff in McLean, specifically to help the visitors and tourists," Beale said. Along the route, Greg Gobley of McLean brought out his 1990 Fox Body Mustang that was modified for autocross. Gobley said his cars are his passion, and having the Power Tour through town was a chance to see builds from across the country without leaving home. "It's beautiful to see all of these nice cars go by from all over the country," Gobley said. "Look at how far back it's getting lined up now." Gobley said he has followed the tour since he was a teenager and has long been a fan of Hot Rod magazine. As for his Mustang, Gobley updated the electronics, addressed safety issues, and modified the body to fit wider tires. He now drives in autocross events, including in Rantoul through the Champaign County Sports Car Club. For those interested but intimidated, Gobley offered simple advice. "Just do it," he said. "Get your dream car and just do your thing with it. Join the club. Look at all these people out here having fun. This is what it's all about." Among the Power Tour participants was Jeff Moores of Lakemont, Georgia, who drove his 1964 Chevy Nova wagon through Illinois with co-driver Vulcan Kunstman. Moores, a retired over-the-road truck driver, said he pulled the car out of a field about 10 years ago and finally got it running after retirement. "The wagon has become a rolling scrapbook. People and children sign and draw on it at his local drive-in theater, Tiger Drive-In, as well as car shows and on tour stops. Messages fill the body until Moores eventually wipes it clean and just starts again. I redo it every year," he said. "I just start over again every year because by the end of the year, with all my activities with this car, it's covered." Like many other enthusiasts, Moores grew up reading Hot Rod and other magazines and dreamed about cars long before he had a license. As a trucker, he saw the Power Tour from outside for years. I would run across Power Tour annually in my trucking life, Moore said. I'd see it and go by and say, oh boy, I wish I could do that. Retirement finally gave him that time. Now nearing 70, Moore said the tour and Route 66 still have the power to bring people together, especially when small towns lean into the moment. For him, the best part is not just the cars. It is the kids who stop to ride on his wagon, the families waving along the road, and the communities that make the old highway feel alive. I'm trying in my little missions on the side to get kids to embrace these old cars, Moore said. Maybe when they come of age, like me in high school, they'll pull one out and get it running for themselves. In other news, inflation rate hits a 3-year high. Fuel prices drive 4.2% CPI increase and hit GOP by Lucia Medicani, writer, Reuters, excuse me, Economy, Washington. U.S. consumer inflation increased at its fastest pace in 3 years in May, boosted by surging prices for energy products amid the Middle East conflict and giving more ammunition for the Federal Reserve to keep interest rates unchanged into 2027. The third straight month of strong increases in the Consumer Price Index, reported by the Labor Department on Wednesday, underscored the mounting pressure on households who are increasingly tapping their savings to cover spending. Inflation outpaced wage growth for a second consecutive month, which could weigh an overall on economic growth. The soaring cost of living is a political liability for President Donald Trump and his Republican Party, seeking to retain control of Congress in the midterm elections in November. Trump won the 2024 presidential election in large part because of his promise to lower inflation, but watched his approval rating tumble as frustration mounts over his handling of the economy. Americans are getting squeezed financially by inflation, said Heather Long, chief economist at Navy Federal Credit Union. It's not just bad vibes about the economy now. There are real financial pressures, especially on middle and lower class income households. The Consumer Price Index raised 4.2% in the 12 months through May, the largest gain since April of 2023, the Labor Department's Bureau of Labor Statistics said. The CPI advanced 3.8% year on year in April. Prices increased 0.5% over the month after climbing 0.6% in April. The rise in inflation was in line with the economics' expectations. The U.S. Central Bank tracks the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Indexes for its 2% inflation target. All inflation measures are running well above the Fed's target. A 3.9% jump in prices of energy goods accounted for more than 60% of the rise in monthly CPI. Energy prices rose 3.8% in April. They vaulted 23.5% in the 12 months through May. Gasoline prices accelerated 7% over the month and were up 40.5% from a year ago. Prices at the pump retreated in recent weeks as oil prices eased, raising cautious optimism among economists that May could be the peak CPI inflation. But the U.S. and Iran traded strikes Tuesday, with President Donald Trump saying Wednesday Tehran took too long to negotiate a deal and would now quote-unquote have to pay the price. Iran has said it would reassess diplomatic engagement with Washington. Inflation last month was also lifted by higher rent. While food price growth slowed after accelerating in April, risks remain to the upside as the war, now in its fourth month, had raised the cost of fertilizers. Grocery prices edged up 0.1%, with increases in the prices of non-alcoholic beverages, cereals, and bakery products, as well as fruits and vegetables, partially offset by decreases in the cost of meat and dairy products. Rents elevated. Excluding the volatile food and energy components, the CPI increased 2.9% year-on-year in May, after rising 2.8% in April. The so-called core CPI gained 0.2% on a monthly basis after rising 0.4% in April. The slowdown in the monthly core CPI mostly reflected a 1.7% drop in motor vehicle insurance, the largest decline since October of 2020. Rents increased 0.4% after rising 0.5% in April. Rent measures were boosted by a one-time adjustment in April after last year's shutdown of the government prevented data collection. Economics expected the effects to fade in May. The dollar slipped against a basket of currencies. U.S. Treasury yields edged higher. The CPI report followed news last week that the economy posted a third successive month of above expectations job growth in May. The unemployment rate remained at 4.3% for a third consecutive month. Though financial markets have started pricing in a rate hike, economics continued to believe that the bar remained high for the central bank to tighten monetary policies. The Fed is expected to leave its benchmark overnight interest rate in the 3.5% to 3.75% range at next week's meeting. Now that the Iran crisis has extended into June, we have begun to see broader impacts across several categories of consumer prices, said Jeffrey Roach, chief economist at LPL Financial. If the Strait of Hormuz remains disrupted through the Labor Day weekend, we could expect the energy shock to affect additional sectors and heighten uncertainty about the future path of monetary policies. In other news, we have a wellness top story spotlight for the Baby Fold. Baby Fold, neuropsychologist launches a book, an app on autism PDA profile, by Olivia Jacobs, 17 hours ago. Normal, a pediatric neuropsychologist at the Baby Fold, herself a person with a form of autism, is working to help neurodivergent children and their families by launching a new book and a companion app to follow later this summer. Described by the Baby Fold as a nationally recognized expert in her field, Dr. Jennifer Huffman lives with the pathological demand avoidance, PDA, behavioral profile within autism spectrum disorder. So that's where this book came from, and also from my perspective of how we help people navigate just the dynamic aspect of neurodivergence, because it's different every day, she said. Her second book, The Neurodynamic Navigator, was released on April 21st. PDA is characterized by an intense need for autonomy and to avoid everyday demands through social strategies, according to PDA North America, an education and advocacy organization. Such individuals are highly stress-sensitive, socially oriented, and often misunderstood, requiring specialized support and accommodations, the organization said. I really have been inspired to try to help individuals who may not be able to get access to me, whether it's in private practice or the Baby Fold, or they don't have the resources to get support, she said. I just want to get information out there, something that's more accessible than people trying to get mental health care for children, because it's very hard to do that. Huffman is a licensed psychologist with her own private practice, founder of the Neuropsychology Center for Attention, Behavior, and Learning, PLLC, and currently Vice President of Clinical Operations for the Baby Fold. Dr. Huffman brings a rare combination of clinical expertise, innovation, and lived experience to the Baby Fold, said Cleet Winkleman, CEO of the Baby Fold, in a news release. Her work is strengthening how we understand and support children and families, helping us respond with greater insight, compassion, and intention. Living with PDA. Huffman said she struggled as a young girl, as she experienced difficulty understanding her own brain while knowing it was different. This set her on the path to studying neuropsychology and to help others experiencing PDA, she said. She recalled being able to write papers and reports, but having no idea where to put a comma or how to spell. She said she could be interested in reading a book such as Treasure Island in high school English class, but when someone would tell her to read the book, then it would be like she can't read it any longer. As part of her Neurodynamic Navigator system, Huffman created the Neurodynamic Quotient or NDQ, to assess a PDA individual's functional performance in the moment. She said the bottom line is that you have to have safety, both physical and perceived, in order to be able to do anything in a given moment. To help people calculate their neurodynamic quotient, Huffman came up with the Neurodynamic Navigator Copilot application, which is currently in the testing phases. Huffman has 20 people beta test it and has been making tweaks here and there. It's not something I do on purpose. It's brain processing. It's like it shuts down, and so just kind of knowing the inside of that and what we are, all the things that impact me, she said. And so, safety isn't just about that felt safety. It's about having autonomy. I'm an information seeker. If I can get more information about it, I can feel more comfortable. But also, there's connectedness, she said. If I am connected with where I am, I feel more comfortable. And then, there's the aspects of dynamic capacity. So safety has to come first, she added. If we move past safety, then we can look at what is someone's capacity, and that could be their actual abilities. For example, Huffman said, if she were given a math assignment, the question is whether she felt safe or would struggle. PDA can also come with sensory or executive functioning issues. A child could have an IQ of 130, but still struggle to tie their shoes on a given day. Huffman also had children who are neurodivergent, and she often uses motivation boosters for them, such as relating a tough assignment to Pokemon to pique their interest. Huffman's husband is a retired helicopter pilot, so she used in the book what she called the quote-unquote heads-up display reminiscent of aircraft controls. She said she is a visual learner and used plain analogies to help explain the concepts as well. She would ask him all the time, what's that thing called that you put your hands on? It's the yoke, and it helped to define her app. If a child feels like they're tracking downward to a crash, they're said to be in the red zone. On the other side, if they're really doing well, they're in the blue sky zone or the green zone. If they're somewhere in between, they're in the yellow zone. And that is where the concept of the pilot's drive for autonomy come in, she explained. The Copilot app. Based on the zone that the person is in, the app will give them a score. Parents can track variables, predict the impact of adjustments, and share information with schools or their family members, Huffman explained. The parents also have to calculate their own profiles to make sure that they're regulated as well as being navigators rather than enforcers. However, Huffman said the app does not require parents to put in their own children's data for safety, so the app uses call signs in place of names. And if someone is struggling or having an emergency, there is a safe way in the app to communicate in that same way that someone could call 911. Huffman said she hopes to release the app by August the 1st and have it available for purchase through Apple. She also hopes to have a free version available as well. Huffman is also the author of Unlocking the Power of My PDA Brain, which was released in December of 2024 and is geared toward kids in their neuropsychological profiles, while the new book is more so for adults to understand PDA. It was just, how do I translate this for grown-ups? So I was very, very excited to have this out, she said. PDA is just not understood. And if so, there's anything that's really being misinterpreted and people are losing access to things that they should have, like schools or services. I thought that that was really the place to start, and that's what I did, she said. Both of her books are currently available for purchase through Amazon. Dr. Huffman's work reflects the kind of innovation and compassion we strive to bring children and families every day, said Sam Guillory, Vice President of Development and Public Relations for the Baby Fold. We're proud to have a nationally recognized expert helping shape our understanding of neurodiversity while also creating resources that can benefit families far beyond our communities. Huffman said she believes her feeling of safety at the baby fold and having a private practice for the last 15 years have helped her make her books and app a reality. They make her feel authentic and keep her in her flow zone, she said. She has two upcoming training events planned, including a hybrid event. When everyday requests feel overwhelming, understanding pathological demand avoidance, PDA and trauma, tools and supports for family, from 1 to 2:15 p.m. Friday, June the 26th, at the Baby Folds Training Center in Bloomington. The cost is $30 per family and complimentary for Baby Folds staff and families. A similar presentation in August will be geared towards academic staff, with a date and time to be yet determined. Once again, she has two upcoming training events planned, including a hybrid event. When everyday requests feel overwhelming, understanding pathological demand avoidance, PDA and trauma, tools and supports for family. From 1 to 2:15 p.m., Friday, June the 26th, at the Baby Folds Training Center in Bloomington, and the cost is $30 per family and complimentary for the Baby Folds staff and families. Once again, a similar presentation in August will be geared towards academic staff, with a date and time yet to be determined. On now to a crime and court spotlight. A Harvey man jailed in Gridley Street shooting case after a Bloomington brawl, by Caitlin Klepek, June the 10th of 2026. Bloomington. A man suspected of being the second shooter in a brawl May 23rd on Gridley Street has been arrested and detained in McLean County Jail. Deshaun Parks, 24, of Harvey, faces one Class 1 felony count of aggravated discharge of a firearm at a vehicle. The defendant appeared Tuesday afternoon before Judge William Yoder for his initial appearance and detention hearing. During the hearing, Assistant State's Attorney David Fitt argued the defendant should be detained in jail, noting that although he has no criminal history, the circumstances of the charge against him indicates a danger to the public that cannot be mitigated by any conditions that would be imposed if he were released. The judge ultimately agreed to jail Parks, saying the quote-unquote dangerousness to the community is just off the charts. Parks was taken into custody June the 4th after the Cook County Sheriff's Fugitive Apprehension Unit and the U.S. Marshals Great Lakes Regional Fugitive Task Force located Parks in his hometown of Harvey, according to the Bloomington Police. He was then transferred to the McLean County Detention Facility. In given the probable cause statement, Fitt said Parks and another man, co-defendant Jeremiah McCottrell, 24, of Normal, had each fired shots after a fight involving over a dozen people broke out at an after party in the area of Gridley and Jefferson Streets. Shots were fired and people were hit by a vehicle during the incident. Witnesses and victims told police that after a silver car began fleeing and struck one or two people, two men fired shots towards the vehicle. McCottrell appeared in court May the 26th, facing aggravated discharge of a firearm, a Class 1 felony, two counts of aggravated unlawful possession of a weapon, Class 2 felonies, and four counts of unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon, Class 2 felonies. McCottrell was detained in his case. The prosecutor said police recovered nine spent shell casings from two different caliber weapons along the sidewalk, indicating two guns were fired. Witnesses additionally said there were two shooters. The fight initially broke out at a local bar over a bottle of liquor, the prosecutor said, and it continued in a different location at an after party in the area of Gridley and Jefferson Streets. About 17 people participated in the May 23rd brawl that resulted in multiple injuries. One woman, told police that after she tried to flee in her car, shots were fired at her car. Another woman identified two male shooters, the first she knew as Jeremiah or a young bull. She gave a description of the second shooter, and the police were able to identify McCottrell, the prosecution said. Police arrested McCottrell at a local park, and although Parks accompanied him and matched the description of the second shooter, police did not arrest Parks. The woman who identified McCottrell as the first shooter was later shown a photo of Parks, and she identified him as the second shooter by the photo lineup, Fitt said. Additionally, the prosecutor said there was photo evidence to show Parks had been in possession of an automatic firearm. However, in arguing for Parks' release, Assistant Public Defender Stuart Wallace said the defendant has no criminal record and has a valid firearm owner's identification card and can legally possess a firearm. Wallace noted Parks was only identified by one individual, despite there being over 20 people at the party, casting some doubt on the state's case. Fitt said the police had been able to get a picture from surveillance video at the bar, where the fight initially broke out, that showed Parks present, but Wallace said his client said he was never even at that bar. Wallace suggested that police had not arrested Parks when they arrested McCottrell because the photos they had of the second shooter and Parks did not match. Instead of detention, Wallace asked that the defendant be released with conditions of home confinement except for when he has to work, noting he is gainfully employed. The judge did not agree with the defense and found the detention to be the only way to ensure community safety. Parks is scheduled for his first pretrial hearing at 10 a.m. August the 5th. Anyone with information regarding this incident is asked to contact Detective Tyrell Klein at 309-434-2366 or tklein@cityblm.org. Once again, anyone with information regarding this incident is asked to contact Detective Tyrell Klein at 309-434-2366 or tklein@cityblm.org. Today's Flick Fact. Today's question. A downpour on Sunday morning this week dumped more than an inch of rain in just 60 minutes across Bloomington Normal, and nearly as much occurred in an hour or two on Monday morning. How does that compare to the biggest rainstorms in Bloomington Normal history? Today's answer, not close. According to weatherwatch.com, the greatest 24-hour rainfall ever recorded in Bloomington Normal was 6.1 inches in only 4 hours. That was August the 3rd of 1943. More memorable deluges in more recent times include 5.6 inches on July 10th of 2003. Personally, I remember, had reservations to join friends at Luca Grill that evening, but canceled massive street flooding. The last truly big local soaking came September the 2nd of 2012, when 3.9 inches fell in a single day. How time flies. 100 years ago today, in June of 1926, the SS Craig's Company, which has been conducting a 5- and 10-cent store on the east side of Square for many years, is expanded. It was learned yesterday, a new department to handle higher-priced articles is to be opened in the near future, and negotiations are underway, leading to the leasing of a location. 75 years ago today, in June of 1951, a hillside above a sheep barn on the Dr. W.S. Fuller Farm, 4 miles southeast of Bloomington, does such a good job in breaking icy winter winds that the water hardly ever freezes there. A windbreak has been planted on the north and west sides of the house to help reduce fuel bills. 50 years ago, in June of 1976, a vandal opened a valve on an Eaton Asphalt Company storage tank on June the 10th and loosened an oil slick into Sugar Creek. An Eaton crew had pumped most of the substance from the creek by noon of June 11th. Up to 2,000 gallons of the substance drained from a 15,000-gallon tank on Eaton property. 25 years ago, on June 2001, Diane Waddles, a Mahomet Seymour High School teacher, is dealing with her grief and sharing her daughter's struggles in a book titled Today I Smile, Tomorrow I May Cry. Her daughter died in a 1995 auto crash. I realize after meeting with her parents' support group that Mandy really did have a story to tell, said her mother. Thank you for joining me today. Once again, my name is Kayla Verhoeven, and until next time, friends, for part 2 of the Pantograph, have a great day.